Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with a review of the WWE Raw show that aired on Monday, August 27, 2012. I'm going to be reading from Ryan Kester's live coverage review. Well, not reading from necessarily, but following along. So if you want to do the same, if you're listening on iTunes, head on over to ProWrestling.net. Look in the WWE TV report section and you can kind of use the same outline that I am as I go work my way through this show. Thank you, Ryan, for filling in for me last night and Chris Shore the week before. Why my buddies want to have fantasy football drafts on Monday nights, I will never know. But we are through that. I will be back for the Labor Day edition of Raw as far as live coverage is concerned. And, well, I'll also be missing. I'm taking the night off to watch the annual doubleheader game or doubleheader on ESPN. So Ryan will be back for that. Then it'll be smooth sailing until late October, and I'll miss one. But I don't miss too many Raws, just kind of a rough stretch here with my Monday-obsessed fantasy football buddies. Speaking of football, it's Madden Day. That's a good thing. I haven't gone out and bought the game yet. I still may today. I just don't have time because I'm going out tomorrow, and I don't know when the hell I'll find time to play it. I do have one more fantasy football draft on Saturday, but I'm looking forward to getting it. And then I'll play like a season on it and be like all excited to play again. And then I won't get to play probably another season the whole time. Every year I spend $60 to play like one season. But I still feel like I have to have it in my house. Speaking of football, fantasy football, all that stuff, head on over to MyFantasyLeague.com if you're looking for a good online commissioner service. It's the one I use. Good guys over there. And I definitely recommend it. It's fully compatible. I play in one league that's offense, defense, all sorts of stuff. We call it the Insanity League because I think it was originally created to test the system, the scoring system at my old employer, Fanball.com, when that was still around. And if it can accommodate that, there's a pretty damn good chance it can accommodate your league if you've got some goofball scoring. One other plug to get out of the way. Today at 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern, I will be making my weekly appearance on the PW Torch Livecast hosted by Wade Keller. And your calls are welcome during the first hour of the show. The bonus portions of the show will be available later this evening to our respective members. You can also send in email questions, just not to me. And I don't have the email address handy, so look it up over on the Torch site if you want. I don't have that email handy. But, again, your calls are welcome. 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern over at blogtalkradio.com. That is the PW Torch Livecast. And now I expect to be scolded by Keller for not remembering the email address that I never use and don't have access to. So why would I, Keller? Shut up. Anyway, Mondays, Raw. 3 hours is a long, long time. The last 2 weeks, I've had the luxury of being able to watch the show on delay, so I'm able to speed through it on my DVR. And I'm not speeding through it like I think the average person is. It's just kind of, in a lot of cases, if you don't care enough to watch a show live, you're going to speed through some of the stuff that looks like filler, maybe a Divas match that you don't care about, something like that. I have to watch everything. And when the show is over with, even with the benefit of skipping through commercials and video packages that I just kind of feel like, well, I get the gist of, it's still a really freaking long night. And that live crowd was really flat for that main event. And I wonder, some of it could be, well, we've seen Lawler, it hasn't been that long since we've seen Jerry Lawler in the ring, and we know what the outcome is going to be still. There could be something to that, but I just think it's an issue of that these crowds are becoming burned out. And, I know WWE is getting a lot of extra revenue for running the extra hour of the show. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it today, because I think I've made my feelings on this pretty clear. It's too much. I think they are doing more harm than good. They are giving away more on television than they should be. Their pay-per-view undercard matches, hell, even the middle card and even one of the title matches. SummerSlam, look at a classic example. It just felt like everything but the main event could have easily appeared on Raw. Even the triple threat match for the World WWE Championship, I felt, had a Raw finish, essentially. And I really feel like this is doing WWE some harm. The notable thing coming out of this show is that we now know it's official. John Cena will challenge CM Punk for the WWE Championship at Night of Champions. What a lackluster announcement that was. You would have thought this was just the main event of any, some throwaway man. John Laurinaitis and John Cena, I think, got more hype than that did. And I have, nothing but confidence in Punk and Cena when it comes to them being able to go out there and make that match feel important and make it feel special. But I didn't like the way this was just kind of thrown out there by AJ Lee right before the main event. And yeah, she paused to try to get the crowd worked up, but it just was like, really? That's it? That's, the match we've been waiting for, a year now? Over a year? That's how it's introduced. All right. But let's start at the top now. We were in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Brewers, and used to be the partial home of the Green Bay Packers. And the, for some reason, seemed like weekend home of my buddy Pooch, who has done the John Material article for .net before, if the name sounds familiar. Every time I talk to Pooch on the weekend, I'm in Milwaukee, but I'll try to make it over for the pay-per-view. Every time. I get like a text from him monthly. He also leads the world in attending weddings. Every time I talk to Pooch, too, he's in Milwaukee and he's coming back from a wedding or he's going to a wedding. It's insane. But Jerry Lawler, CM Punk. And now, if you haven't listened to one of my All Access podcasts lately, I'm not going to go through every little thing like I used to just because it's 3 hours and we don't have time and I'm going to work under the impression that you've seen the show. Or you can at least follow along with Ryan's report this week and kind of guide you along. The Punk and Lawler segment at the beginning of the show, really good work. And, there's a lesson to be learned from CM Punk, Jerry Lawler, Triple H, and the mic work that they did. I think so many young indie wrestlers that I hear, and just guys that never quite grasp this, believe it or not, when you see them cut promos at that, minor league indie level, they go into wrestler voice. What they perceive is how a wrestler talks, and it sounds hokey, it sounds phony, it sounds just like any parody of pro wrestling that's done, they're using that voice. Where Punk, Lawler, Hunter, and the really good talkers, yeah, they may be able to go into that voice and yell at you a little bit to make their point, but they're mostly talking to you. And then building up to that moment where they might go in, yell a little bit or something. And Punk a little bit different now because he's heel, and so there's a little bit of a different tone to his. But, Jerry Lawler is just talking to you in a believable manner, doing little nuances. There's little subtle things about Jerry Lawler. It's not about the decibel level. It's not about the volume. It's not about how loud you scream. If every indie wrestler out there is, yelling during a promo, none of them stand out. What stands out is when a guy talks and he builds to that key moment where he does raise his voice a little bit or just do something to really drive home that this is the point we've been building up to. These guys do that so well. And I just thought Jerry Lawler was spectacular here in the opening segment. For that matter, Punk as well. Just being a good heel, tearing down Lawler in his career, Memphis Wrestling, his work as a commentator. There was just so much to like here. It was old school and effective, what we saw between Punk and Lawler. I also liked the way that WWE didn't have Lawler accept the challenge right away. I could have done without the Punk, I'll think about it line at the end. I kind of figured that's what he was doing. I didn't really need that to be said. But even going into commercial breaks, it was a nice hook. Michael Cole would ask Lawler about it, and he wouldn't give him an answer. And it's like one of those, 3-hour show, or hell, even if it was still a 2-hour show, it's just something you do to kind of keep viewers. Yeah, everyone assumes he's going to take the match, but makes them just sit around a little bit longer and go, and makes them want to see it more, essentially is what I'm trying to say. So, very good work consistently throughout the show on the mic for both guys when they were, when Lawler was focused on what he was doing with Punk and not just commentary, essentially, but he wasn't out there much long. He accepted the challenge fairly early. He wasn't out there too long. Our opening match was Ryback beating Jack Swagger in 209. The crowd getting behind Ryback to some extent. You still get Goldberg chance, but you also get Feed Me More chance. Jack Swagger, they are talking about his losing streak. Regular listeners know my take on that. If they talk about your losing streak, that's usually a good sign that they have some plan for you to get out of that losing streak. And I was even more encouraged when I heard Swagger, after he lost the match, say, that's it. Just frustrated at ringside. That's it. Does that mean, okay, now we're about to kick into whatever that thing is to get him out of his losing ways? I don't know why Jack Swagger's been put in this role. It may take some time for WWE to get people invested in him again, but I really hope they try, because the guy does have talent, and it's just, I don't understand why he's being wasted. Plenty of hype for Triple H. We got a lot of videos, too, on the show of DX moments and everything, and I can't say that the DX moments, it just feels like we see them so frequently. It's like that didn't build it up in a way where it's like, wow, this is a big moment. Just show me like the career highlights with a little bit of DX, but mostly everything outside of DX. That's for the tone of what they were doing here. I want to see that more so than some of the, you know, the fun antics that we see too often, I think, frankly, in these video packages. The second match was Layla defeating Natalya in 244, the WWE Divas Champion. Still dances, still does this weird version of Iceman King Parsons butt that I actually got a kick out of Iceman and that move when I was like, you know, 12. When Layla does it, not so much. Her dancing, she's trying to be funny, and she's just not. Like, she gets this big dorky grin on her face and tries to go over the top, and it doesn't work. I mean, that's a big part of the flaw with her act. The other part is that WWE isn't really giving her any... She doesn't have a character. She's that woman who used to be with Michelle McCool that now is a babyface and came back from knee surgery. There's nothing more to it than that. We don't really... You know, they haven't given us a reason to invest in her. And so, I mean, she's not getting over. I don't think the fans care any more or less, really, about the Divas division since she won the title. But... So, you know, most of it is on WWE creative for not giving her a chance to, you know, and I'm not saying she's the person that I would pick to be the Divas champion. She's not. But if you're going to do that, at least give her a chance, you know, come on, give her some mic time, do something to let people get invested in this. Vicky Guerrero stood on the ring apron throughout this and was kind of had that, oh, God, get this over with. I have an announcement to make. That's way more important than your stupid match thing. You know, at first I'm like, well, it's kind of demeaning. And then I got to thinking, and I'm like, you know, is there even a way to demean the Divas division at this point? You can't cheapen what they're doing even. To me, it was Vicky's out there. The fans have something else. It's like suffer through this and find out whatever Vicky's going to say. And I don't even know that that's such a bad approach to take. I mean, hey, I'd love it if they were doing more with the Divas and showcasing the better in-ring workers, that not just, you know, plain Jane workers or anything, but, you know, some of the, there are women out there that combine the looks that WWE wants and good in-ring ability. You know, so I wish the Divas division was stronger, but if they're not going to do it, it's like, all right, you're filling time. Yeah, this probably would be a channel-changing moment for a lot of people, but at least you distracted us a little bit by shaking it up and putting Vicky out there. Vicky was just screeching, and I know that's kind of her thing. For me, I'm sitting there, like, turning up the volume. What the hell is she saying? It didn't, I figured it out after I rewind, and I honest to God turned on the subtitles, because I made out some of it, but it's like, I guess I should try to make this out. And, the act is always over. I mean, Vicky is the woman that fans love to hate, and it's not as over as it used to be, but people still, you know, the live crowd still come to life for that. They definitely enjoy harassing Vicky. AJ came out after she was insulted by Vicky, essentially, and talking about, he referred to her as a mentally deranged child. And she skips out, which just doesn't work wearing the outfit that she is. It's not working for me. There's something lost with AJ in this bad wannabe Stephanie McMahon outfit. The first week when she came out in the exact clone outfit of Stephanie, I got a huge kick out of that. I thought that was great. And I was hoping we might actually get some backstage, you know, exchange between the two. Now it's just there's something missing from AJ with her new look, and I'm not sold on. I don't know if we're supposed to like her, dislike her, and if it's my assumption as well, you're supposed to think she's unpredictable. Yeah, she is, but not in a, wow, you know, what is she going to do next kind of way. It's just, you don't really feel, I don't feel strongly about her one way or another anymore. And that's a shame because she was so over. But she just came out and smacked Vicky. So you would think that's a face move, I guess. And so that was it for that. We got more Hunter videos. And then afterward, we got the first of the Daniel Bryan anger management segments. And I think this was the first of them. He was in group therapy. That's what it was. And the therapist kid showed up wearing a goat face mask. And Daniel Bryan flipped out, not knowing who it was, thinking somebody was messing with him. And the therapist pointed out that it's my son, and he's playing a goat in the Noah's Ark play. Wow. That was not a well-written thing there, I got to say. Overall, I guess we'll get to it, but overall, I did enjoy this. I did not expect to. I promise you, I did not expect to enjoy this. The Kane stuff, once we got into that, was pretty damn comical, so we'll get there. And then we got, you know, more goading from Punk via Twitter. You have to watch Twitter, you have to view Tout, and oh yeah, we have Raw too. It wasn't as hectic this week. There have been some weeks where I'm like, what the hell? Like, Brock Lesnar announces retirement via Tout? Yeah, that's one people are going to take seriously, WWE. Way to go with that. Lawler then ended up announcing that, yes, indeed, he will fight CM Punk. So, and then I think he made his exit at that point too, because he had to go prepare for his match with CM Punk. And then we had John Cena come out to beat The Miz in a non-title match again. 10:40, Miz got a lot of offense. Nobody took it seriously. He got a couple of near falls, actually a few. There was one off a DDT, I think it was, that you could tell the crowd was kind of, whoa, because Cena kicked out so late. But nobody takes it seriously. And I, for the life of me, don't know why they keep going back to this match. I don't know why they keep having The Miz as Intercontinental Champion lose non-title matches. I think in their mind they're going for the vulnerable heel champion, and they feel like, well, if he loses on TV every time, then people are going to pay to see the pay-per-view to see him lose. And I've been an advocate of that in the past. We've just seen way too much of it, and I don't think it's effective anymore. I think it's damaging the heels that are put, you know, that get the title. And Miz needs wins. Miz shouldn't be in there with John Cena right now. There's no reason. They might as well just, like, grab one of the heroes of superstars or even go out and find themselves a good old-fashioned enhancement talent, borrow a guy from Ryback and put him in there with John Cena. Yeah, it might not get the ratings, but you know what? You're not doing major damage to one of your heels by repeat and your title belt, your Intercontinental title belt, by showing that this guy's just not in Cena's league. And competitive match, probably more Miz offense than Cena, but no one's taking it seriously because they know the outcome of this match. They know that John Cena is going to win. And I mean, as far as maybe you can't get 10 minutes out of an enhancement match, I'm not trying to say that, but I think you could do a 4 or 5 minute enhancement match with Cena where he's just, you know, hitting the signature spots, a 3 minute match with Cena. And I don't think people just turn the channel because, oh, John Cena's wrestling Jake the Milkman Milliman, I need to turn over to football. I think it's, no, this will be quick, but I want to see Cena's key spots. And you're not damaging the Intercontinental Champion and the Intercontinental title in the process. I really dislike this. And no, not because John Cena won. Of course John Cena's going to win. And I just didn't need to be Miz here. And I don't know what they're thinking. Then it was we got to vote on whether it was a tables match, a steel cage match, or a no DQ match. I like Will Pruitt's idea in his Pruitt Pause, which is available on the main page over ProWrestling.net. He wanted to see like Punjabi prison match included. I think that would have been great. I'm all for that. Punk versus Lawler in a Punjabi prison match for no damn reason. At least be one of the options. Come on. That'd be really good fun. Back to group therapy. And by the way, Harold, the African-American gentleman sitting next to Daniel Bryan in therapy and later grabbed by the throat by Kane, is independent wrestler Scorpio Sky, who is certainly familiar to TNA viewers because he was recently appearing as Mason Andrews. And he has worked for WWE in backstage things in the past as kind of an extra. A lot of indie wrestlers actually do. They will bring in extras. They'll book extras for shows, not knowing if they need them. That way they just have them on hand if they need security or something like that. I don't know that this, I mean, I think they've started a Twitter page for him, but so I don't know if that means he's in or if it's just, let's have a little fun with this and he's just an extra for a week. You would think it would be, I mean, they're making it seem like this is going to continue. We haven't seen the last of these therapy sessions. So does Harold stick around? Is Harold involved in these? Are Daniel Bryan and Kane going to, I guess they're acting like they're done during the week. So is the doctor going to Australia with the Raw crew? I mean, we're not supposed to think about that stuff. But Kane entered with the Predator mask. And this is the point where I'm like, oh, God, this is awful. Kane shows up wearing that awful mask and yuck. And then they have him remove it eventually and all that. And it was just like, really? Now Kane's involved in your bad Saturday Night Live sketch or whatever the hell this is supposed to be. But it got better. We'll get to that, of course. And then our fourth match was Santino Marella beating Heath Slater in 309. Hated this as well. I was happy to see Heath Slater get a win on SmackDown. I would have had him go over with the Oksana distraction and maybe give him like one or two more wins and then start having him boast about how he can beat Ryback, how he has the more impressive streak of wins than Ryback does. And yeah, it's not going to pop a rating or anything, but it gives him a little something to do. It gives Ryback a little something. You know, people, if you make Heath Slater annoying enough, well, you know, make people want to see Ryback shut him up. Just little undercard, something you do on a 3-hour edition of Raw to fill a little time. But instead they put Santino over because the Cobra has a mind of its own and somehow the Cobra is like really horny for Oksana. I wanted Oksana and Cesaro to get the hell away from Santino as fast as they could. The last thing we need to see is Santino regaining his U.S. championship. I don't even want to see him challenge for it. I want to see Cesaro and Oksana move on to just a completely different program, ideally with Christian. I actually liked when they had a match on SmackDown and Christian beat him in it, and you know, before he won the title, and it's like, there it is, there's your next feud. If Cesaro wins, and Cesaro has won, yet we're not even seeing Cesaro, we're seeing, for some reason, Oksana likes to torment the Cobra. Not doing anything for me, but Slater, he's going to lose way more than he wins, but he's still fun. I think they could have done a little something with that idea that I threw out there. Just, like I say, just filler for a week. And then it was time for Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes to lose to Brodus Clay and Sin Cara in 231. I think they spent more time setting up why Sandow, who is a snob and doesn't like anyone, would team with Rhodes, I guess it was fairly quick and effective where he just said he finally found someone that he can have an intelligent conversation with. And, the match was, I'm fine with this. I think you can expect to see a lot of tag matches like this. We saw another one later in the show with this 3-hour format where there are existing feuds amongst the wrestlers in there. But rather than put them out there in singles matches, you try to build up, keep the feud going via these tag matches and before they go back to working their singles program. So, like, Clay is feuding with Sandow and Carr is feuding with Cody. Put them in a tag match. Problem is, I don't think they figured out that let's put some heat on the heels by having them win. That's going to make people more interested in the singles program. In this case, it was Brodus pinning Cody. So they're not giving you the payoff of Sin Cara pinning Cody or Brodus pinning Sandow. Still, I'd like to see the heel go over more often than not in these tag matches. Back to therapy. And this is where Kane was awesome, talking about his childhood. I think it was burying his brother alive twice, a reference to Katie Vick, mentioning hooking up the testicle battery charging incident with I think it was Shane McMahon, and his his obsession with beating the hell out of Pete Rose. This was all fun. It really was, and it's like, doesn't, they're not treating Kane, like if this was like Monster Kane that we were getting when he was feuding with Cena, I would have said, wow, this is wrong. This is not where you do it. They're back in that mode where Kane is just kind of the guy they've got toiling around the mid-card. And so, I mean, for, if nothing else, it made me laugh. I enjoy it, you know, good scroll down nostalgia lane with something like that. It's just, it's something that works for the Kane character. For some reason, there's so much hokiness to it that just turns me off, but he survives that. He can definitely survive this. This was very fun. And then Harold, Scorpio Sky, stood up and thanked Kane for sharing after everyone else left and offered him a handshake. And Kane reaches out, grabs him by the throat, but then thinks better of it. So progress was made is the with this weird therapy doctor. And from there, we went to the match number 6, R-Truth beating Daniel Bryan via countout in 3:02. I was fine with this, the way this was done. Daniel Bryan was trying really hard not to get all bent out of shape about the yes chance and not respond with no. And he eventually couldn't stop himself because Truth ended up cutting a promo that got the crowd chanting yes, and that led to Daniel Bryan freaking out and chanting no back at them. Truth did this so that he could just sneak back inside the ring, and while Daniel Bryan was flipping out, he was counted out. Cute, clever, good use of Daniel Bryan. I hope angry Daniel Bryan doesn't go away anytime soon. I'd love to see Daniel Bryan work in main events and playing a more serious role, but if he's not going to, and he's not right now, this is fun. This always gets a great reaction out of the live crowd. I think it's one of the things that, you know, if you asked a casual fan, like the 5 things they're looking forward to most about Raw, and they could only mention like John Cena once or something, I really think like yelling at Daniel Bryan would be on that list for most of those fans. Then it was time for the Triple H moment. I think you're going to get some, the usual Triple H polarizing type of reaction to this. I was okay with it. I was actually impressed by it because it amazed me that this live crowd was totally respectful, hanging on his every word. Not as like the people weren't weeping in the crowd. We'll put it that way. But they were listening. They were attentive. They weren't just sitting there going, yeah, we don't think you're retiring. They were able to suspend their disbelief because I honestly don't think those fans thought this is the end. I think they just played along, you know, just like they do for every match that takes place when they know there's a scripted out, you know, winner and loser. I think it was very effective. Hunter, for what it was, again, I didn't go into this thinking, ooh, is Hunter going to announce it? No, I don't think anyone really felt like that. You know, maybe really young fans. But for the most part, I think 95% of the audience is sitting at home going, yeah, this isn't, you know, he's not retiring. But you have to play it this way. He basically went Brett Favre on the bit, to continue with my football theme, don't know what's next, don't know what I'm going to do, but then, you know, thanking the fans and being very respectful. I kept waiting for that line that would drive online fans completely over the edge. Like when he was talking about, typical Hunter would have probably been him making some comment about, yeah, I could still be 99% of the guys on the roster, but if I can't beat that top 1%, then it's time for me to step aside. And we didn't get any of that. You know, he didn't insult anyone. He played this well. He was able to work up some tears. He got, you know, he was nostalgic talking about his career. Yeah, you know, if you're going down this road with Triple H teasing retirement, then, you know, this is what needed to happen. And I felt like he played it very well. And so, it still doesn't make me want to. I'm not on the edge of my seat going, God, I hope he comes back and beats Brock Lesnar. I don't feel that way at all, and I think you're going to see them drag this out because, as I've been saying ever since SummerSlam now, right after SummerSlam, right before, I don't think that you're going to see Taker and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Taker has a bum shoulder. I don't know that he wants to work that physical style. I don't know that he trusts that, you know, he wants to have a really great match if he does this at Mania. And I don't know that he trusts that he can get a great one out of Lesnar. So I think this is the rematch. I could be wrong. It could be something that happens at Survivor Series, but I don't think so. I think they're going to drag this out somehow, some way, and you're going to see these two wrestle again at WrestleMania with Triple H getting his win back, and then everyone's happy and yay, and Brock Lesnar maybe goes away if he doesn't have a new WWE deal. I mean, that would be the end of it, I assume. I mean, all, you know, everything sounds like if he's only there through Mania under the current deal, doesn't mean they can't resign. They can't work out a new deal, but I do think that that's a WrestleMania match that they're working toward right now, as Triple H and Brock Lesnar have been saying for, again, since before SummerSlam. Then it was time for Dolph Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio to lose to Sheamus and Randy Orton. Again, why put heat on the heels? Especially when you're setting up the logic here. I mean, the crowd was really into this. They love Randy Orton. They really do. It was an 8-minute and 24-second match. Sheamus ended up broke-kicking Ziggler, and I think Orton, did he hit the RKO on him after that? Orton, though, is the one that got the pin, I believe. I don't see it in Ryan's report, but I think it was Orton pinning Ziggler, and I think that was the logic here, was let's, you know, have Randy beat Dolph to set up the rematch. Even if it was Sheamus beats Dolph to set up a match between Orton and Ziggler, I don't get it. I don't. I mean, I think Orton and Ziggler will be a hell of a match on SmackDown to give him time. I'm looking forward to watching that. But it doesn't mean that they set it up effectively. Nice to see them advertise that match for Friday. Why? Why can't they do crossover promos? Why can't we get, now that the match is set, they have 3 hours to freaking work with now. Believe me, there's filler on this show. They could find time to, after that match is announced, go backstage, get some comments from Randy Orton and Dolph Ziggler, and, you know, set up the match for Friday, make it seem more important, and God forbid, you know, drive up SmackDown's ratings. And, of course, the same should be done for Raw, but I don't think they know what the hell they're doing most weeks when it comes to, you know, the show. Even if they were to, like, well, the show's taped Tuesdays, I don't think they, unless they've announced a main event for Raw the next week, I don't think they know what the hell it is. But at the very least, I don't see why you can't do this for SmackDown. But at least they gave it a little hype and shows that they were booking at least a day ahead when they came up with Orton and Ziggler. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, good match that the crowd was into, because they definitely like Orton. And I think they like Orton more than Sheamus, is my perception of it. But it's not, you know, a huge gap. I think there's a pretty good gap in terms of popularity with Orton, with most crowds still seeming like he's more over. And that's another one. I wonder if they're saving that for WrestleMania, Sheamus versus Randy Orton match. I think as long, you know, I mean, hopefully they don't make the mistake of doing one of those, well, we're going to start it at the Rumble and it's going to finish at Mania. Just make it seem like a big showdown match at Mania. We don't need matches between Sheamus and Orton before then. I don't even want them to get physical. Nothing. No touching. They went backstage where Jerry Lawler told John Cena to let him fight in the match against CM Punk later. At some point, I don't remember when they announced the stipulations of the cage, but cage match won, shockingly, in the poll. No surprise there. Tables matches does win a lot. People do like tables, believe it or not, but not when there's a cage is another option, I don't think. But for, let's see, we went to, it's time for Kane to come out. So Josh Matthews runs away. He's in fear of Kane because Kane just knocked him around and made him miss SmackDown last week. And but I love that attack. Like, Josh Matthews was unable to do his announcing duties at SmackDown, yet at the same taping he hosted Saturday Morning Slam. Kayfabe is dead, everyone. Kayfabe is dead. Next match was Zack Ryder beating David Otunga in 2:22. Nice to see Ryder get a win. Too bad it came against Otunga, who people just don't give a damn about. Like I said, I'm happy Ryder gets to win. There's just something about Otunga when he comes out and does that awful Lex Luger pose routine that didn't work for Lex Luger back in the Narcissist days. There's just a disconnect moment for me. I'm like, oh God, it's David Otunga. Who's going to beat him? Kane did get in the ring, grabbed Ryder by the throat, let him go. Progress was made in that brief anger management therapy session. and then chokeslam David Otunga. And I think the announcers, I think Cole was saying that the old Kane would have chokeslammed both men. Kane was on commentary for the match, but he didn't say anything. From there, we went to Josh Matthews. He's back. And that's when he did. Sure enough, they announced the stipulation for the main event. It was cage match, the gimmick. And AJ ended up coming out and said, and that's when she made the announcement that CM Punk will defend his championship at Night of Champions against my choice. Long pause. John Cena. Like, awful. I mean, this, maybe it's just the, I don't make that about AJ's choice or anything like that. Now it plays into a storyline because I still have this daydream fantasy that somehow, some way, this is going to make sense and that they're doing long-term planning and Punk and AJ are actually in cahoots, and that's why she had to say my choice, because this is what Punk wants and he's the one actually pulling the strings here. But I mean, if that's the case, fine. But either way, I mean, this is like blockbuster, holy shit news, or at least that's how it should be presented, given their history, given how big the Money in the Bank match, you know, match they had in Chicago was, and SummerSlam. I mean, now it's just, hey, it's another pay-per-view main event is how it feels based on their hype. Again, you know, I do want to stress, I have faith that Punk and Cena, given, assuming they're not bogged down with some hideous storyline, I think they're going to do just fine in setting the tone for that with their mic work, but this felt like kind of a flat start as far as the actual announcement was concerned. And let the debate begin. Is it too soon to go to this? I said that SummerSlam, had it happened there, I mean, yeah, probably too soon, but with an apparent Rock versus Punk and Rock versus Cena, with those matches on the horizon for Rumble and Mania, you, at least my assumption is, when do you do it? I would have done it at SummerSlam. I would have made that a two-match show in retrospect, but I think they decided, let's spread it out, and we'll give people the throwaway triple threat to set up this match, the singles match at Night of Champions. I know from doing audio with Chris Shore, he feels strongly that, like, well, don't do it until next year's SummerSlam, and there's certainly a case to be made there. Wade Keller's made the same point when I've done, I don't know if he said SummerSlam, but he felt like SummerSlam was too soon, so it'll be interesting to hear Wade's thoughts on you know, whether he still thinks this is too soon in the live cast today. And I know Shore does. He just feels like, can wait till SummerSlam next year. And there is something to be said for doing this on a bigger show. But if it means that they're taking Night of Champions seriously and they want to start making that feel like a bigger event, I'm cool with it. I mean, I do think it probably is too soon as well. But, again, when do you do it? And maybe if you wait until next year's SummerSlam, I don't know, CM Punk retire? He's talking about retiring early. I think he'll be there. But, you know, I mean, a lot can happen, a lot can change, and this is the story they want to tell for now, I guess. But then main event time was CM Punk beating Jerry Lawler in 7:23 in a cage match. The WWE champion worked over pretty good by a 60-some-year-old man in Lawler. This is where I think you miss a guy like Jim Ross. I think he would be able to kind of... I think people can suspend their disbelief for this, but you always worry about, like, Punk with the credibility factor just because of the size. Not that, I don't think online fans have that issue at all for the most, the diehard online wrestling community, if you will. It's the average fan out there, the casual fan that, he's small, I could kick his ass. That guy, most of them are freaking morons, and no, you couldn't kick his ass, but... still, it does that keep some of them from going, I'm going to wait until John Cena wins the title? And that's why I was an advocate of Punk beating Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Still am. That would shut people up. Now that they're both heels, that would obviously be tougher to accomplish, but I've been saying that for a while. I'd like to see Punk getting, somebody like that. Big Show, give me a real clean, decisive win over Big Show would help. I don't think we got, trying to think if we actually got one. I don't think we did. Maybe I'm forgetting a pay-per-view main event. Triple Threat wasn't. But Lesnar especially would be so effective with that. The opposite of that is putting him in there with the King, the 60-some-year-old guy, and having the King get the better of Punk at times. But, Punk eventually came around and just toyed with him. So hopefully that was enough to shut up that idiotic portion of the casual viewing audience. But this was very entertaining. I liked it a lot. I liked it more than the live crowd did. Were they drained? Were they not as into the idea of Jerry Lawler wrestling again? Did they feel this was predictable? You know, what was the issue? Maybe a combination of those factors. I kind of felt like this was a little rushed, only from the sense that why not set this up for next week's show? You know, do something else in the main event this week, and then, but I mean, I guess they are on their timeline too. There's only two more Raws before Night of Champions, so maybe you do this angle last week. They got it started last week, but I kind of like the idea of once in a while, something especially like this with Lawler where he's thinking about it. Maybe at the end of the show he says, you know what, yes, it'll be something else happens. I'll take that fight. We'll do this next week. You know, I miss that kind of thing. They don't do a good enough job of building up to that. And it goes back to what I was saying about SmackDown. With all these SmackDown guys, you know, on Raw, why can't you do more of that? You know, I want a match this Friday on SmackDown. The wrestlers don't even talk about it. We see graphics. We hear the announcers talk about it. But we don't hear wrestlers talk about, coming up on SmackDown. There's none of that. It's so bizarre to me. But I really did enjoy everything with Punk and Lawler. I think I know there's some people that didn't. I've got somebody on Twitter just, you know, they like, you know, the show was headlined by Lawler considering the main event last night involved Jerry Lawler, go get Madden in regards to a question Will Pruitt asked about whether he should do his pause review or go get the new John Madden football game. And that's coming from one of our regular readers. And I mean, it's not going to be for everyone. I definitely get that, but it works for me. It works for WWE filling time on a three-hour show. I think you need to build up more things, more storylines between your top guys and a mid-carder that is a pest for a couple weeks. That's why the little thing I mentioned with Slater, yeah, it's undercard and it's not going to draw pop a rating, but it, you know, but it might tell a little story and maybe that, you know, it holds people's interest. It makes them, gives them another incentive to tune in to finally see Ryback kick his ass. I'm sure Ryback's destroyed him before. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say it's some new match or anything. But they need to do things like that just to have storylines within the show that don't always lead to something on pay-per-view, that just keep things a little fresher. It involves talent that you're not going to pay to see Punk versus Lawler on a pay-per-view. I threw it out there as a possibility if they wanted to save Punk versus Cena for Survivor Series, that they could go there and then load up the rest of the show, but obviously they didn't, and I didn't, you know, I gave it like a 5% chance or something in audio talking about it. I mean, I assumed it was going to be Punk and Cena, and sure enough, it is. We also know, as far as Night of Champions goes, the World Heavyweight Championship match is set with Sheamus against Alberto Del Rio, at least until Booker T decides it's not, and then makes it on again. That was a mess. But, yeah, we're getting, you know, two world title matches are set thus far. Every title will be defended. Yes, even the Divas Championship. I'm hopeful that if we're going to be stuck watching the U.S. title match, that it's just, all right, let's just give them Cesaro going over Santino and we can move on. Because I don't know who they think they're appealing to with this Cobra nonsense. It's not good, and I just think Cesaro is above that. And I think Cesaro and Oksana as a duo is actually pretty good. So hopefully they'll move away from that. But, you know, overall, yeah, it's a draining show. They're keeping it more interesting than I thought they could without making some format changes. If you recall, I'm a fan of a 10-minute pre-show that, you know, it's part of the Raw. But for, you know, 10 minutes, maybe Jim Ross and somebody else kind of gives you that football pregame style show discussing Raw, getting, you know, telling you what's on tap and what, you know, reviewing a little bit of last week, 10, 15 minutes, just to eat up some time and give people kind of something different. This, we're 3 hours, and instead they're giving us like skits with, for instance, the anger management some weeks. Overall, I've been impressed with the way they've been able to keep my interest during these shows. I mean, there's a match here or there that I don't care about. I'm sure most people feel the same way. But I do still worry this is doing long-term damage, that maybe they're giving away more on television. Not last night, necessarily. I thought they did a pretty good job of finding things that, well, this isn't a pay-per-view match, or this isn't a a potential TV main event, even we're giving away, you know, the undercard stuff, those tag matches I talked about. And then Lawler and Punk is something that should be playing out on television. But there are those weeks where they give you matches that it's like, well, God, this could be like one of the top three matches on a pay-per-view. Why are they giving this away in the middle of the show or something? So they're doing a good job, but I still have of keeping it interesting. I still think it's too long. I still think it's draining. I think they're going to suffer for it come in 2 weeks when the NFL season begins. And there's decent games on ESPN because I think there's going to be a lot of people DVRing it. And I think a lot of people are going to just fly through some of the nonsense stuff that they don't, you know, they'll find a way to trim it to a 2 hour show by getting rid of maybe the Divas match or, if they're, you know, whatever they're not into. I think you're going to see a lot of people skipping it and also just going, I don't have 3 hours to watch this. You know, I'll talk to my buddy or I'll go read ProWrestling.net and see if there's anything I need to see. It didn't look like it was all that good. This is taking up all this space on my DVR. Goodbye. You know, and just not watching, and that's not a good thing. So 3 hours, it continues to be a dangerous move and seems to be draining some of these crowds. So entertaining, yet all the concerns I've had about this move since it was announced are still in play. That's going to do it for me for now. Again, more free audio this afternoon over at blogtalkradio.com with the PW Torch Livecast, Wade Keller and myself. Joined by you as a caller if you are interested in calling in. And we'd love to hear from you. Let us know or let me know if you could that, hey, heard about this on the All Access podcast or maybe on ProWrestling.net. It's always good to hear from you guys. So I'd really appreciate that. But thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. Take care.